This is your AEW Dynamite Halloween review for Wednesday, October 28, 2020. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage. As always, I'm here with you each and every Wednesday night. Tonight, we saw the TNT title defended in a lumberjack match. We had two Eliminator semifinal matches to determine who would be going on to Full Gear to challenge one another for the right to become number one contender for the AEW World Championship. Phoenix was out. Pentagon was in for his match with Kenny Omega. That was the main event tonight on the show. Plus, we had a town hall to determine whether or not MJF would, in fact, join the Inner Circle. I don't know if anybody watching really expected him to join the Inner Circle. We had a few cameos in that segment. One in particular, we'll talk about when we get to that segment. Also, we even had an NWA Women's Championship match, a brand new NWA Women's Champion crowned last night. Serena Deeb coming to Dynamite tonight to put her title on the line. So it was a loaded show here, 10 days out from the Full Gear pay-per-view. Did it deliver? I will say this. The opening match delivered, and the main event also delivered. I thought the main event kicked ass. Everything in the middle, I thought everything in between was fine. Nothing spectacular, nothing I would say is worth going out of your way to see. I thought it was fine moving stories along for the pay-per-view, but it's how you open and it's how you close. And I thought they opened hot, and I thought they closed in a big way. So that's a good show. And by the way, before we get into the whole show, I know over on USA we had Halloween Havoc. I've been talking about this for years, wishing the WWE would bring back, they would resurrect the Halloween Havoc name, and it took NXT to actually get it done, just like it took NXT to bring back the War Games match. So I was very excited to find out they were resurrecting Halloween Havoc, and I will be watching that tomorrow, even though everybody in the chat has basically just spoiled the whole damn thing for me anyway. So anything special that may have happened on that show, it's probably already been spoiled for me anyway. I'll be reviewing that on the podcast on Sunday. So that'll be episode 676. Part of my big podcast on Sunday will be my Halloween Havoc review. But tonight, Dynamite opened with MJF and Wardlow. So right out of the gate, we were opening up with MJF and Wardlow. MJF made it very clear that if Wardlow were to go on in this Eliminator and become number one contender and eventually become the AEW champion, that title would be as much his as it is Wardlow's. Wardlow is under contract to MJF. Ergo, MJF said that therefore the title would become my property as well. What I liked here was the fire that we saw from Sammy Guevara. And it was a little weird, and I'll tell you why. We know that Sammy Guevara, it's already been established here on the show, he does not like MJF. He does not want MJF to be part of the Inner Circle. He confronted MJF all by himself. This was as serious as you will see Sammy portrayed on this show. He almost came off like a babyface here. Right, no backup, no Chris Jericho, no funny business. He just goes over to MJF. He gets up in his face. He starts threatening him. MJF had a fantastic line here. He referred to Sammy as the guy who looks like he sells Adderall to middle schoolers. And I got to say, as I'm looking at Sammy in that moment, he's kind of right. He's kind of right. He's got a point. So I liked a little bit of interplay here between these two. But Sammy came off more like a babyface. And the reason that's weird, besides the fact that he's part of a heel faction, he has a match coming up with Matt Hardy at Full Gear, which I believe is going to be cinematic Hardy Universe style from the Hardy Compound. At least I hope. That's what I'm hearing. So that's good news. But you would never know that he was going into a pay-per-view match with Matt Hardy. You would think he's going into a pay-per-view match with MJF. I don't know if that's building to something, a new change in attitude for Sammy or what, but I enjoyed the little bit of banter we got here between the two of them. They immediately went into the arena. We had our first of two semi-final eliminator matches here on the show. It was Wardlow one-on-one against Hangman Page. I really enjoyed this match. Now, we've had hot opening matches on Dynamite before. I would not say that this was the best opener I've ever seen on Dynamite, but it's up there. It's up there. I've seen some Jungle Boy matches that I think I've enjoyed more, but I enjoyed this more than I thought I would. And Wardlow really was the star, I think, coming out of this match. Wardlow, he speared Page at one point into the air and then through the barricade at ringside, through the barricade, the metal barricade. Page barely made it back into the ring before the count of 10. So we had Hangman Page clotheslining Wardlow out to the floor, hits the moonsault off the post. I hold my breath every time he does that. It's only one. I don't want to jinx him, but I'm just saying he's only one injury away from just completely screwing up all of these storylines. So Hangman needs to stay healthy. Back inside, he hit a standing shooting star. Wardlow kicked out at one. So Wardlow blocked the first attempt at the buckshot lariat. Got him up for the F10. Page rolled to the floor, though, after he hit it. So Wardlow couldn't cover him for the win. And Adam Page hit a fallaway slam to Wardlow from the top rope, which was very impressive. Wardlow is a big dude. Now, when I call Wardlow a big guy, you got to understand something. As compared to guys who are maybe 6'7", 6'8", Wardlow is not that big. Wardlow, I believe, is 6'2". But in a company where you do have a lot of smaller performers, physically smaller performers, and I think really just in general in pro wrestling today, 6'2", I feel like 6'2" now is more like what 6'5" would have been years ago, if that makes sense. So Wardlow, he's still 260, 265, I think that's what he's billed at. So I call him a big guy, but again, everything is relative. 260 pounds is still big. So to see Page hit a fallaway slam to him off the top was impressive. Hits him with the first buckshot lariat, only takes Wardlow down to a knee. It takes two of them. The second one takes him down, and Hangman gets the pin. Wardlow is very agile for a 260-pound man. And you know who he reminds me of? And it really hit me watching this tonight. Mike Awesome. Mike Awesome was a guy, and I'm thinking Mike Awesome more so from, you know, ECW. I really don't think of his WCW days, the Fat Chick Thrilla. I try to block all that out of my memory. Mike Awesome in ECW. Big guy, very agile, very athletic for a big guy. Former world champion. That could be Wardlow one day. Wardlow could be the agile big man holding the world heavyweight title. One day it could happen. He reminds me in a lot of ways of Mike Awesome. I get these Mike Awesome vibes from him. But, you know, when we talk about Hangman, and I do this a lot too, when I talk about the young crop of talent they have in this company that they could build around that are probably going to carry this company 2, 3, 4 years down the road, you think of a lot of the same names, right? You think of Hangman, you think of Darby Allin, you think of Sammy Guevara, Jungle Boy, Ricky Starks, Will Hobbs is a project of theirs. They're going to see, you know, Will Hobbs could be the next big thing. We don't know. Wardlow should be on that list. In fact, I would say Wardlow is near the top, and MJF, of course, but Wardlow is near the top of that list. So I don't want to hear from anybody that, you know, because there are still people who will lob the complaint about the ex-WWE guys. Yes, they do have ex-WWE guys, but there is a very big young core of talent that they have that they are building. And the hope is that a few years from now, it won't be Chris Jericho slotted up near the top. Well, Chris Jericho may not be appearing as much, and they won't rely on guys like him and Moxley. It'll be more these guys carrying the company, along with Omega and the Bucks and all of them. So they have a really good core, but don't forget Wardlow in that conversation. I think he belongs in that conversation. Eddie Kingston one-on-one with Matt Sydal. There was a report, and I apologize, I didn't make a note of the Twitter handle. It's like an AEW fan Twitter handle. Apparently they broke some news a while back. I didn't know about this until this week, that in the Battle Royal, where Matt Sydal came out as the Joker card at the very end, that's when he had the unfortunate slip. He went for the... Anyway, I don't want to bury the guy anymore, but it was not supposed to be Matt Sydal in that spot. Apparently, it was supposed to be Nick Gage, but I guess Nick Gage was injured, and so the spot went to Sydal instead. So I don't know if Matt would have gotten signed anyway by AEW, but that would have been That would have been interesting if Nick Gage got that spot. And you got him and Eddie Kingston all of a sudden maybe making appearances on TV. But it wasn't meant to be. Kingston made a comeback here. Dropped Matt with a spinning back fist. They did cut to Lance Archer and Jake Roberts in the crowd a couple of times. They did not look amused whenever Eddie Kingston was reminding all of us that he was never eliminated from the Battle Royal. But there they were, just sitting in the crowd. I guess they had the night off. And Eddie locked him in the choke, got the submission win. He would not let go of the choke. It's the same move he put on Jon Moxley. It's the same move he's planning on using on Moxley at Full Gear. In fact, he was imagining Matt Sydal as Jon Moxley, and he would not let go until the bunny, Allie, came in the ring with the Butcher and the Blade, and she held the microphone up, and Sydal finally said, "I quit." And then he released the hold. So this was all just to get Kingston some ring time in advance of the main event at the pay-per-view. Perfectly fine. Anytime we get to see Eddie Kingston on the microphone like we did before the match is fine. Moxley was not on this show, but they are going to be together. I guess they're doing a face-to-face on TV next week. Next week is the go-home show. The pay-per-view is not this Saturday. It's the following Saturday. So we got one more Dynamite left before Full Gear. Excalibur sat down with the Young Bucks, with FTR and Tully Blanchard elsewhere via satellite, I guess in a safe location. They were in a safe space somewhere else. And Excalibur was asking Matt Jackson about his ankle injury, the ankle that FTR had worked over with that chair the week before. How is the injury? Are you going to be good? Are you going to be okay for the pay-per-view? And, you know, he talked about, Jackson talked about how it was a severe sprain. Don't worry about it. I'll be at Full Gear. I'm going to be fine. Nick Jackson is kind of murmuring under his breath, "You're not fine." But, you know, he's like, no, don't worry about it. That's fine. I'm going to be at the pay-per-view. The thing with Matt Jackson, he tries too hard. He tries too hard to be tough guy. Nick Jackson kind of plays it a little more laid back. But every time I see Matt Jackson, it's just too over the top. You know, he's trying to be this tough guy, this badass type. I don't know. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work for me. I feel like he's just overdoing it. I don't think anybody's buying it either. Cash Wheeler, after a while, he gets sick of Excalibur asking questions of the Bucks. He goes, "Look, we're the champs. We're sitting here. If you don't have any questions for us, we're going to get out of here." And so they and Tully stood up and they left. Matt Jackson announced it at Full Gear. If they do not win the AEW tag team titles. Now, this is their first match. This is not like this is the third match of the program or something. This is the first match in the feud. And he's already laying it all on the line and saying that if they don't win the titles at the pay-per-view, they will never, ever again challenge for the AEW tag team titles. So they're rehashing the Cody stipulation from Full Gear 1 year ago. That was when Cody wrestled Jericho, same stipulation. If I can't beat you and I can't win the AEW championship, then I can never again challenge for the title. And they're using the exact same stipulation, which we look in the case of Cody, we all know at some point they're going to figure out a way out of it. Cody will eventually be able to challenge for the world title. Do we really need to do this again? We already have one guy doing it. I mean, what is this about? Are we going to get TNT tag team titles? Is that what's going to happen here? FTR is going to win. We're going to get a second set of belts for the Bucks to have. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but I mean, come on. Is this really necessary? They are needlessly doing this stipulation again because there's only two options here. Number one, they just gave away the finish of the match in Full Gear. And the Bucks are going to win the belts, and then they'll probably trade them back and forth. If they did not give the outcome away, well, now you've just put yourself in this hole again where we all know the Bucks are, it's not like the Bucks are never again going to challenge for the belts. And you now have to come up with a creative way, a clever way of kind of climbing out of the stipulation or going back on a stipulation that you made. It was not necessary. All you had to do to sell this match was it's the first ever meeting between the Bucks and FTR. And we know it's not going to be the only match they have. This is the stipulation that would come in match 2, 3, 4, not in match 1. It just feels like they tacked this on for no reason. So I'm not a fan of them adding that stipulation. I don't think it's necessary at all. It's just in the first match this early, it's not a stipulation that needs to be added. I don't think it adds really any more real interest than people would have had going in. You're either interested in seeing FTR and the Bucks wrestle for the first time, or you're not. I get the sense there are a lot of people, frankly, who really aren't feeling this. I'm not really as excited for the match as I thought I would be either. I mean, they've done really nothing wrong in building FTR. FTR is unbeaten. FTR has been kept strong. I like that they have the manager in Tully. Their matches are fine. Technically, there's nothing wrong with their matches. And I think these two teams will probably go in there and have a pretty kick-ass match at Full Gear. The Bucks, I'm not a fan of what they've been doing with the Bucks. Portraying them as heels that aren't really heels. They have an attitude. I described them a few weeks ago like a couple of emo 15-year-olds. They come out, they're acting all tough, they're kicking people in the face. Like, you're not tough guys. So if there's one flaw in the ointment, as John McClane would say, that would be my one gripe with this whole thing. But I don't know, I feel like there should be more excitement about this match. As much as it's been built up, you know, the AEW fan base, the AEW audience feels like those are the fans that would most be interested in seeing this for the first time. I don't know, it just feels like this is lacking that excitement that it should have. It's just missing a little something. Maybe they felt the same way. Maybe that's why they felt the need to add the stipulation. But I don't think it was necessary. Tony Schiavone and Dasha hosted a town hall to discuss whether MJF should join the inner circle. No Jake Hager. He's in training for his next MMA fight. Luchasaurus was up first. He was asking the first question, which was so ridiculous. I mean, it's Luchasaurus, so he had the mask on. And he gets the first crack here. He says he has a question for MJF. He wants to know how MJF can bring economic value to the inner circle. How are you going to increase the inner circle's bottom line? Because, you know, he's a smart guy. He's got his master's degree, which he mentioned. Does MJF does not. So how is MJF going to bring value? And MJF just so happened to have a chart ready to go. He put it up on the Tron. He showed the numbers going up. Whatever. Britt Baker, she had the next question for Chris Jericho, which I actually, because I was so focused on Reba, who was talking about Chris Jericho and how beautiful he is and his smile, mocking that strange woman at that other event that was the stuff that she was saying to Trump or whatever. She was going on and on about his smile. That's all this was. They were just playing off that. But I actually forgot to pay attention to what Britt Baker's question was. So obviously it wasn't that important. Peter Avalon was up next. His question was very simple. He asked Chris Jericho point blank, can I join the inner circle? And they laughed him away. Then came the big cameo. It was EB from Cody, Wyoming, and in walks Eric Bischoff back on Dynamite. Last time we saw Bischoff on Dynamite was during a similar segment. I think it was also a town hall or a debate. It was the debate, right, with Chris Jericho and Orange Cassidy. So Bischoff had the next question. It says it's a three-part question. It says JFK once said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. You like that? Very presidential of me. MJF, what can you do for the inner circle? And MJF had one word. He said, friendship. What is this, Mortal Kombat? Bischoff then asks what he thinks the inner circle can do for him. And MJF says that if there's one dent in his armor, it's the fact that he may not be the best team player. But he goes, if he joins up with these guys, they can teach him. He can learn how to be a team player. Bischoff got one last question in. He called Jericho a prima donna. Jericho flipped out. Tony Schiavone yelled at him, told Jericho to shut up. And Bischoff turned to MJF and said, since you share a lot of those same characteristics, what are the chances that the two of you, if you guys link up, what are the chances that the two of you don't end up killing each other? And Jericho said, you know, I would like to know that too. How do we know that you're not just going to stab us in the back? And this offended MJF that he would even ask such a thing. He got very upset by this. He goes, you gave Jericho the best segment of his career. So I ask you, what haven't I done, Chris? I've been your friend. I've done this for you. I've done that for you. I've gotten you guys jackets. We had this big segment last week on the show, which actually did not do all that great. It was actually one of the low. It might have been the lowest quarter. I know Jericho was going on about minute-by-minute stuff, but the actual quarter-hour ratings of the show, I believe the Dinner Debonair was actually the least watched of all the Dynamite segments. But you would never know. They talked about it like it was The Rock and Mankind, This Is Your Life. The payoff came after this. Jericho says to him, well, I know one thing, because you haven't beaten me. And what did I say, right? The only logical conclusion to this was that it was going to lead to a match at Full Gear. The only question was, is one guy going to turn on the other this week, or is it going to be like a friendly exhibition? But either way, they didn't have an opponent for either guy. You knew that they were going to have a match against each other, and now it is official. So at Full Gear, it's going to be Chris Jericho one-on-one with MJF. If MJF wins, Chris Jericho will allow him to join the Inner Circle. That doesn't mean that MJF will join the Inner Circle. Only that Jericho will allow him to join the Inner Circle. Remember, words matter here. Just remember that. Ortiz interjected. He made it very clear that he and Sammy Guevara do not like MJF. They do not want MJF in their group. And he issued the challenge for next week, Ortiz and Sammy, which is an interesting team. He said, Santana is kind of like in the middle on you, but you know, me and Sammy, we don't like you. So it's going to be Ortiz and Sammy Guevara next week against MJF and Wardlow. And it makes me wonder, is that where the split happens? They teased it at the beginning of the show tonight when MJF cut Wardlow off in that promo and said, you know, if he goes on to win the world title, that title's mine too. He goes, ain't that right, big man? And Wardlow said, sure. Didn't sound very enthusiastic. The future, really, I think, is in Wardlow when he finally breaks away as a single. I say babyface. I'm not saying he should go around smiling all the time, but as a babyface on his own. And I think he could get over that way. Again, it sucks that we don't have, you know, the packed crowds. I think Wardlow's another one of these guys where when the split with MJF happens, he would be over like gangbusters because he's a bigger guy who can work. He's very agile. He can do things that could, you know, get a nice reaction out of the crowd. He's not like some lumbering, boring, two-dimensional guy, but they don't have those people there. So again, it's hard to get that reaction. I mean, they were piping in fake crowd noise like crazy tonight. That was noticeable. So I don't know if they want to wait a little longer maybe to do the split, but it makes me wonder if we could see it as early as next week. I think it's got to be, you got to think that it's a possibility. Now, again, I enjoy most of the banter and the back and forth between Jericho and MJF. We knew it was building to this point. Now, what's going to happen at the pay-per-view, I don't know. Possible MJF wins, and then he says, you know what, Chris, screw you. I don't want to be part of your little posse. Because I just don't see him joining the Inner Circle. I just don't see what is to be gained from that. So obviously he's not going to join. I also wouldn't have Jericho just beat the guy straight up. That's why I say maybe MJF wins. He earns Jericho's respect. Jericho says, you know what, Maxwell? You've earned the right to join the Inner Circle. And MJF turns him down. They could go any number of ways with this. Really depends on what their plans are for these guys coming out of this show. That's really what it boils down to. Cody against Orange Cassidy. Lumberjack match for the TNT Championship. Orange Cassidy, they did this kind of dueling spot thing earlier in the match where Cassidy was on the apron. Cody knocked him backwards. Best friends were among the lumberjacks outside the ring. They caught Orange Cassidy, right? They protected him. A few minutes later, Cody fell off the apron into the waiting arms of best friends, and they promptly dropped him on the floor. And the camera was right there, perfectly positioned, when Cody told him, "Let go." Then they dropped him. Oops. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? See, the camera guy was in perfect position to pick up on that. But the camera person kind of fucked up the finish. Well, not the camera person. It was more the production. The production crew almost kind of fucked up the finish with Arn Anderson. Cody was in the ropes. Trent took a cheap shot at him. They come back from picture in picture. It was all chaos. All the lumberjacks are just brawling. They're all fighting each other all over ringside. Cody superplexes Orange Cassidy from the top rope down onto the pile of lumberjacks. Wipes everybody out. We got a 10-minute time call, as we get the time limit here in these TNT title matches. Cody Cutter for a near fall. There was a diving DDT by Cassidy. He hit the beach break. Cody kicked out. Then came the finish. John Silver of the Dark Order comes running into the ring, and he catches Orange Cassidy with a pump kick. Arn Anderson decks Orange Cassidy. I think it was a left hand. He decked him. The camera barely caught it. I think they showed a replay, but the camera barely caught it. But Arn Anderson getting physically involved here in this match. Very disappointing that Arn Anderson would get involved and we didn't see a spinebuster. How are you going to have Arn Anderson get involved and not give us a spinebuster? Come on now. Use your head. If Arn can throw a punch, he can hit a spinebuster. Crossroads gets the win. They played it up like Cody didn't know. He had no idea about the interference, or he had no idea that, you know, Arn was going to get involved. This was just another step in the heel turn. Clearly, that's what this was meant to be. They've been building this for a while now. They did show Darby Allin sitting up in the stands. He was watching all the action from the empty stands. I will say this, I'm happy that they did not turn this into a triple threat at Full Gear. I thought that's what they were going to do. And maybe that would have been a great match, but this needs to be one-on-one. This needs to be one-on-one Cody against Darby. I don't need this to be a triple threat. I don't need this to be a fatal four-way. I don't need the Dark Order involved. I don't need Ricky Starks and Taz or anybody else involved. Cody and Darby Allin. So I'm happy they didn't turn this into a three-way. However, I really don't like lumberjack matches. I don't like, as a general rule, there are some that maybe are fine. I don't like the whole lumberjack stipulation. Now, refresh my memory. I thought that part of the idea was that they wanted to make sure the Dark Order was kind of kept in check, or that they were kept at bay. They were out there as lumberjacks, and they got involved. In fact, they played into the finish of this match. So if that was part of the idea behind doing a lumberjack match, then what the hell was the point of having the Dark Order out there as lumberjacks? That didn't make any sense. Unless I completely misunderstood the whole purpose behind the lumberjack match, which is possible. But so they can keep an eye on them? Is that why? Because if they're out there, you know they're going to get involved. That's stupid. One of the many reasons why I do not like lumberjack matches. Backstage, Miro and Kip Sabian, they presented best friends with a gift. A Halloween gift. And we saw Penelope Ford was dressed up as me, or as Orange Cassidy. Gave the weak thumbs up. But then they attacked them. They attacked the best friends. And when they opened the gift, it was actually part of the arcade that they destroyed. I think it was the motherboard. And Miro was talking about, he was telling Trent, "I will never, ever forgive you. This is dumb. This is just dumb." And now Miro is going to have a match with Trent next week. So we'll get some, we'll get a singles match with Miro. Actually, Miro against Trent could be a very good match. This whole arcade story, you know, it's fine as like a low undercard story. Not the sort of thing Miro should be involved in. Now, I mentioned that we have a new NWA women's champion. Her name is Serena Deeb. Thunder Rosa is the champion no more. Last night, it was the UWN Primetime Live pay-per-view. She lost her championship to Serena. And it's a great comeback story for Serena. I mean, a lot of people will remember Serena from many years ago in WWE when she was part of the Straight Edge Society and she shaved her head and she was getting that push for a while, but she was gone for many years. WWE brought her back and she was working off camera. She wasn't working on camera as part of the active roster. But you look at her story from this year, where she was just a few months ago to where she is now, she was part of that wave of cuts. So when WWE made all of their cuts earlier this year, she was a coach. And she was wrapped up in those cuts, and so she lost her job. But that's what she was doing. She was a coach at the WWE COVID Coliseum down in Orlando. She winds up earning an AEW contract, and now she becomes the NWA World Women's Champion. So that's quite the comeback story in the span of just a few months. For Serena, to the unemployment line, to a brand new contract and a brand new belt. So that's a very cool thing for her. Thunder Rosa, now that her reign is over, and look, who's to say that Thunder Rosa won't eventually win the belt back? Maybe she's going to win it back and become a two-time NWA Women's Champion. Thunder Rosa, I thought, did a fine job of representing that title. And a PW Insider says that she remains under contract to the NWA. And I feel like everybody is sort of assuming, not everybody, because there are people who think she's leaving because Dave Meltzer is reporting something different. But you hear that and think, well, she's still under contract to the NWA, and maybe that means the rumors about her are not true. The fact that she's still under contract to the NWA, though, that doesn't really mean anything. If you just think back to earlier this year and the whole James Storm story, as James Storm has told the story, he got an offer to go to WWE, and he was taking the offer. And Billy Corgan and Dave Logano were more than happy to let him out of his contract because, as he tells the story, they told him that we brought you in with the hope that WWE would get an interest in you. Yeah, because James Storm's not exactly a young guy. They probably saw his window was closing and were hoping that WWE might take an interest. You know, he had that little, I can't even call it a stint. I mean, it was more like a tryout in NXT 5 years ago, I think it was. Maybe not that long. And he ended up going back to Impact. Actually, I think it might have been that long. But he was never a part of WWE officially, like on the main roster or anything. So they let him out of his contract. He was under contract to the NWA. They let him go because he got a better offer. He could make more money. So, yes, it may be true that Thunder Rosa is still under contract to the NWA, but so is James Storm. My point being, that doesn't mean anything. Now, the reports are that she is possibly, yeah, this is not confirmed, but the reports are that she may be WWE bound, or more likely, she would be NXT bound. I assume that's where she would land. I don't think she would be zoomed over to the WWE main roster. So she would likely be NXT bound if she was going there. And if she is, I hope she brings her hazmat suit with her. Put the bubble around her as she wanders on into the COVID Coliseum. They have a lot of really dumb people who work down there at NXT, and I'm not just talking in the ring. That is not my preferred landing spot for her, but that's not my decision to make. It's her choice. It's her career. She hasn't commented on it one way or the other. Wherever she lands, I hope she does very well. She is somebody who has really worked hard. She was under a mask in Lucha Underground the first time that I saw her work. And it wasn't until the NWA where I got to see the real Thunder Rosa. And she was a real standout on that NWA roster. They didn't have a very big women's division at all on NWA Power. It was really just a very small kind of clique of women that they had. They had Melina and Thunder Rosa and Marty Bell, maybe one other female, like regular, that I can't think of right now. But that was the opportunity for her to really start to show what she can do and really make a name for herself. And when she won that championship, she was defending it all over the place. So if she has parlayed that into a big money offer, if she has parlayed that into a bigger opportunity for her, then hey, I wish her all the best. But all I'm going to say is that WWE, here's a company that, by her own admission, she's given interviews and talked about the fact that, I think maybe last year, WWE had an interest in her as a referee. They had an interest in her not as a wrestler. They had an interest in her as a referee. I question how badly WWE really wants Thunder Rosa. And I selfishly would love to see Thunder Rosa, you know, wrestle in a whole bunch of different places. Be the traveling champion again, or go to AEW, because she could, if she were to sign with AEW, from day one, she's top two or three in that whole division. They could build that whole division around her. If not Sheeta, they could build it around Rosa. I think Rosa's more marketable than Sheeta is. But she's going to go wherever she feels that, you know, she's going to get the best offer. But I would think twice before putting pen to paper on that one. So Serena's first title defense came tonight, and it came against legit Layla Hirsch, who we have never seen on Dynamite before. She made her debut, I think, on Dark. I think was her debut last night. And she actually wrestled Sheeta. It was non-title, but she wrestled Hikaru Sheeta, and she lost. So I guess that means that she wrestled. She went from wrestling the NWA Women's Champion tonight. First, she wrestled the AEW Women's Champion, even though it was probably taped last week. That's back-to-back nights, back-to-back losses. But I had never seen her before. I've heard of her before. I looked her up to know where do I know that name from. She was part of the Tokyo Cyber Squad earlier this year in Stardom over in Japan. And Jim Ross was talking about her as an amateur wrestler and having an amateur wrestling background. She had the amateur wrestling boots on. She was moving around in there like a female version of Kurt Angle. She even hit a moonsault at one point. Picture perfect moonsault, just like Kurt Angle used to. And just like Kurt Angle, she did a belly flop. Kurt Angle missed many a moonsault in his career. So she's got that amateur wrestling background. By the way, Sheeta, I mentioned Sheeta a moment ago. She is going to defend her title against Nyla Rose at Full Gear. I've been wondering what's going on here. Nyla Rose has been number one in the rankings now for what feels like months. We haven't even seen Nyla Rose on TV. She got a new manager and she disappeared. And they finally are putting her in the ring and giving her her shot against Sheeta. So if she loses, then she should go to the back of the line. Let's get some other faces in there. Speaking of faces, the NWA women's title still has Thunder Rosa's face on it. Boom, right in the middle. They have a little picture of Thunder Rosa. They should just leave it there. They should make it the Thunder Rosa Memorial Belt in honor of her run as the NWA women's champion. Oh, Allison Kay. That was who I was... Man, the disrespect for Allison Kay. That was who I was trying to remember before from NWA Power. Allison Kay. Layla used a whole bunch of different holds. She was going after Serena's arm. They put a commercial break in the middle of this match. That's usually a killer. I mean, it's a killer for any match, but they do it with every women's match. And that may just be because people do tune out during the women's segments, I guess, based on the quarters. I don't know. But it was a killer, just putting that break here in the middle of this match. I think it was picture in picture, but who gives a shit? I mean, does anybody care if it's picture-in-picture or not? How many of you pay attention to the picture-in-picture breaks? I just wait till they come back. They come back, Layla hits a pump knee, German suplex, missed the moonsault that I mentioned, and Serena hit two neck breakers and a single leg crab, and Hirsch tapped out. I would like to see more of Hirsch. I thought she looked good here. I thought Serena looked good here. Apparently she traveled cross-country to make it to the taping tonight. She wins the championship last night, flies in, has what I thought was a very good match here. New faces. This is good. New faces. The one problem I see is they almost have done too good of a job, I think, of promoting this NWA Women's Championship at the expense of their own title. I think the NWA Women's title and these NWA Women's title matches feel more important than the AEW women's title. So while I am in favor of bringing in these new faces, and I love having the NWA women's title defended on the show, I think that's great. It's something WWE would never allow. You would never see it on any of their shows. I think it's cool. But they got to be careful. I'm not even saying necessarily tone down the NWA stuff. I'm saying do a better job of playing up your own championship. Because their belt feels more special than your belt on your own show. That's a problem. That's a problem that they should address. We had Sean Spears, Mr. AEW Dark himself, making an appearance here on Dynamite against newcomer VSK from Massapequa. I know some people from Massapequa. I don't know some VSK. I wonder, did they say what VSK stands for? Let's see, Massapequa, so it's got to be Vincent. I'm going to guess that's Vincent something. It's just based on the people I know from Massapequa. I'm going to guess that's what the V stands for. It doesn't stand for victory, I can tell you that. Spears, he made short work of him, hit the C4 Death Valley driver right away, instantly. Instantly. This was like Brock Lesnar and Kofi Kingston, where Kofi came across the ring, Brock picked him up. Same thing here. Sean Spears picked him up, Death Valley driver, 1-2-3. Excalibur mentioned that on Dark last night, Spears trashed Scorpio Sky's locker room. They've had a little feud going for a while now. So he mentioned that he had trashed Sky's locker room and wrote the word thief on the wall. He wrote the word thief on the wall, I guess, for stealing his spotlight. So he wrote or spray-painted thief on the wall. He's lucky this isn't the Russo era, or else he would have written something else on the wall. Spears was being heckled after the match by some guy at ringside in a Halloween costume. I swear to you, at first, it was a bull costume, but when I looked at it, I could have sworn it was the Mantar head. And I looked and I said, holy fuck, it's Mantar. So he goes over to Mantar, and he grabs Mantar, half man, half tar, and he brings him into the ring. And I think we all knew who was under the costume, right? So he brings Mantar into the ring. Of course, it was Scorpio Sky underneath. Sky lays him out with the RKO or the TKO. And so these two are going to have a match on Dynamite next week. Riveting. Can't wait. Not my favorite feud going in this company right now. Can't you tell? Can't you tell? I'm so excited to see Sean Spears, who, shockingly, the announcers mentioned that he has the best win-loss record of anybody in AEW all year. I don't know if that's true. I thought Moxley was undefeated. But if it's not the best, it is apparently one of the best win-loss records in the entire company. 14-2. Now, I'm sure most of those 14 came against people like VSK and FTW and NWO and PPP and whoever else. So, I mean, how impressive really is it? But 14-2. Sean Spears is 14-2 this year. Why isn't he challenging Jon Moxley at Full Gear? Shouldn't he be the one challenging for the championship with a win-loss record like that? 14-2. Holy shit. The main event was the second semifinal eliminator of the night. Kenny Omega against Penta El Cerro Miedo. Phoenix came to ringside with his bro. Phoenix was not medically cleared after that rough bump he took on the show last week, so Penta got the spot instead. You know, Omega has a real gripe here. And if I'm Kenny Omega, I'm protesting this. Because think about it. Kenny Omega has now had two opponents in this tournament who backed out or were pulled for medical reasons, whatever the case may be. He was supposed to wrestle Joey Janela in the opening round. Joey Janela was potentially, possibly around somebody who had COVID, so they pulled him as a precaution, and they put Sonny Kiss in the spot. Shouldn't he have gotten a bye to the next round? If the opponent can't go, then the other guy should get a bye. No bye. No bye. They put a new opponent in there. This week, it's supposed to be Kenny Omega against Phoenix. Phoenix gets hurt. He can't go. He can't get medically cleared. So what do? They put his brother, who already lost the match, they put his brother in his place. No bye. No byes in this tournament for Kenny Omega. No byes. I'd be pitching a fit if I were Omega. So he has a legitimate gripe if he wanted to complain about that. That is technically what should have happened. He should have gotten a bye all the way to the finals. So Omega revealed under his shirt. He came out wearing a blue t-shirt, and underneath he was wearing the AAA Mega Heavyweight belt. I had forgotten he was even the AAA Mega Heavyweight champion. He won that title 1 year ago this month from Phoenix. And so he had the belt on. Phoenix was outside. He was like he was being taunted. He wasn't very happy about this. Omega, by the way, is scheduled to defend the AAA belt at the Triple Mania show. And I think they're eyeballing December possibly for that show. It really is all, you know, it's all COVID permitting. So maybe there'll be a Triple Mania. Maybe there won't be. Last I heard, the problem was kind of out of control in Mexico. Maybe it's gotten better. If I'm Kenny, I don't know about flying down there for that show. But that's what he's scheduled for at this point. Yeah, they've got some real problems, some of these promotions, because you've got Kenny Omega holding the AAA Mega Heavyweight belt. John Moxley, it's easy to forget, is still the IWGP United States champion. He's got that belt. I don't know if they're going to be able to get him to come to the Tokyo Dome one of those two nights for Wrestle Kingdom in January. I think he'd like to go. AEW would probably let him go, but it all depends on the travel situation. So at least in those two cases, and maybe more, you know, on the independents, you've got all these champions who they've got belts that they're not defending. At what point do you make the call like, all right, just mail the belt back? We'll have to just crown a new champion. Penta hit a tope con hilo out onto Omega before they cut to the final break of the show. When they came back, Omega hit one of his own. Pump kick catches Omega right in the teeth. Penta comes off the middle rope with a sling blade for a near fall. These guys were having a great match. It was building slowly and slowly. Penta had Omega upside down in the corner, came off with a diving stomp. Omega wrecked Penta with a knee lift. Just absolutely, I mean, almost kneed his head into the fifth row. Wrecked him with a knee lift to the face for a near fall. Running V-trigger connects, up for the one-winged angel, Penta fights free, and Omega gets Pentagon on the top rope. This was the one part of the match that really pissed me off. So he gets Penta on the ropes. And at first, Kenny is climbing up, and it looks like he's going to give him a suplex, you know, back suplex, off the ropes. And Penta fights free. Omega ends up on the ramp. And he's dazed because Penta had caught him with a shot. So now he's on the ramp. Penta hits a destroyer to Omega. He comes off the ropes, hits a destroyer on the ramp, and spikes Kenny down on his head. And I was already pissed because I already knew this was not gonna end the match. But he gave him a destroyer on the ramp. So he takes Omega and he puts him back inside. And I'm fuming. Because I'm just thinking to myself, you just did a destroyer on the ramp, and it's not the fucking finish of this match? Nope. Not only was it not the finish of the match, he put him back in the ring, and he hit a package pile driver. He followed up a fucking, just a destroyer on the ramp with a package pile driver, which is his finish, by the way. So he's hitting all of his big moves here. And Omega kicked out. And I understand that Omega is one of the big stars in the company. It's not like some scrub kicked out of his finish. And I should be used to it by now. We see it all the time. But it still pissed me off. If you're not going to end the match with it, then don't fucking do it. Just don't do it. Is nothing sacred anymore? Is there any move that is... You know, we live in a world. Just think about the logic in this, okay? We live in a world where destroyers, Canadian destroyers, Mexican destroyers, call them whatever you want to. They used to call them Mexican destroyers on Lucha Underground, or at least Matt Stryker used to call it that. We live in a world where destroyers off the top onto a ramp or a pile of chairs, I've seen that too, don't finish a person off, but nobody can kick out of the end of days from Baron fucking Corbin. That's actually a credit to WWE, the fact that they've been able to protect that finish. The end of days and the bro kick have to be the two most protected finishers in all of wrestling. if the End of Days is a move that people just do not kick out of, I don't want to see people kicking out of Destroyers. That goes for Dustin and all these other people who use them as just fucking setup moves. It's hard to wrap my head around that. The End of Days is one of the most protected moves in wrestling, and a Destroyer off the top is not. That's just wrong. It's just wrong. So V-Trigger catches Penta right under the chin. Another one-winged angel attempt. Penta wiggles out. And now he's got the arm of Omega. So he slips out. And now he's got Omega's arm in position for the arm breaker. And he snaps the arm. And at least Kenny sold the arm when he made his comeback. So it's not like he snapped the arm and then Kenny just sort of, ignored the fact that this guy just snapped my arm. He was selling the arm like it was, you know, broken or it was in pain, at least. Penta with the springboard comes off the ropes right into a V-trigger. He eats the knee. And finally, the one-winged angel wins it. My anger over the Destroyer stuff aside, that was an excellent match. That was a fantastic main event here between these two guys. And I thought a fine replacement for what I'm sure would have been absolute madness and insanity if Phoenix were in there. I mean, think about Phoenix, right? If he was in a position like this in the main event, the things that he would have done, he would have been in a pile of rubble on the floor. He would have been a lot worse off, probably had he had the match this week, than he was from that one bump from last week. So maybe it was for the best. But Penta went in there and he took over and he stepped up. He had the best match. I thought this was easily the best match of Penta's run in AEW. And it's mostly been tag team matches. But this is as good as he's looked in any match since he's come over to the company. And now the match of Full Gear is all set. Just like I've been playing it up now for how many weeks? Kenny Omega in the finals, one-on-one against Hangman Page. You could go at least a couple of different ways with this. Assuming we have a winner and it's not like a draw or some kind of non-finish to build to a rematch. You don't want to have a cop-out finish. The one thing AEW is good at, they don't really screw you over on finishes. We see rarely, if ever, do we have disqualifications, no countouts. Not that there can't be, just that we haven't had them, really. And they really tend to not screw the fans over on match finishes, so I don't expect that here. I think it's one of two things. You can work it both ways. You can have it where Hangman wins. It's a competitive match. Kenny thinks he's got it in the bag. Maybe he's getting a little overconfident. In the end, Hangman wins. Not dominantly. It's not like he hits the buckshot lariat and pins him, but maybe it's a roll-up, slip on a banana peel kind of finish. And it just sends Kenny over the edge. It sends Kenny over the edge, and that's what leads to Kenny just officially snapping. And he just laces into Hangman Page. There is no longer any debate about whether or not these two guys are friends, okay? It's the loss that sends him over the edge. We get the cleaner. We get the heel Omega. That's one way. The other way to do it is Kenny Omega cheats to win. So they're having a competitive match. No matter what he does, he just can't seem to put this guy away. He underestimated Hangman. He's been calling Hangman, oh, he's a good tag team wrestler, right? He's been talking about that recently. And he can't put this guy away, so he has to cheat. Whether he holds the ropes, or he hooks the tights, or a low blow, or a thumb to the eye, whatever it may be. He kind of goes heel in that way. Anything to get the win. And Kenny wins, and Kenny becomes the number one contender. That's the finish that I favor. Because I think Omega is the one to take the title from Jon Moxley. Eddie Kingston ain't taking nothing from Jon Moxley. I think you want to kind of build maybe to Revolution in February, and you do the match there. Kenny Omega against Jon Moxley, and that's where Omega wins the championship. 1 year to the very event where Jon Moxley won the title from Chris Jericho. And the eventual match between Hangman and Omega for the title will mean that much more. Let Hangman be the one to take the belt from Omega, not the other way around. So that's kind of how I see it playing out. That's how I would like to see it play out. You know, it reminds me of a storyline that TNA did many years ago. I'm actually going to talk about this in the history segment on the podcast this weekend. Two friends, former tag team partners. Think back, right? 2011. I know some of you were watching Impact back then. I know I was. Beer Money. Bobby Roode, James Storm, both babyfaces. Bobby Roode had a title match against Kurt Angle, Bound for Glory, and he failed. He didn't win the championship. James Storm went in there, I think, a week later with Kurt Angle and pinned him in 2 minutes to win the belt. They had a match, I think, a week later. And the way that they, you know, the way that they built this and shot it and everything was perfect. Bobby Roode has this crisis of conscience in the middle of the match. He can't put this guy away no matter what he does. He can't put his partner away. And he happens to see the beer bottle sitting over there on the ring steps. And they shot it. Like, you can see the gears going in his head. And he takes the beer bottle and he smashes it. Smashes it right over James Storm's head. Pins him, wins the championship because he would do anything to win that title. And that was the heel turn. That was the heel turn that sent Bobby Roode on the best run of his career. And you could have a similar dynamic here with Omega and Hangman. That was one of the best story twists, one of the best storylines that TNA ever did. The entire existence of that company. So that was your Dynamite show. I thought a good show. It opened hot. It ended hot. Everything in the middle was just kind of there, but it built to next week. It built to Full Gear. So I would call that a good show on the whole. To the tune of 74% thumbs up, you guys seem to agree. On Twitter at Solomonster, you can vote. Right now it's about 74 up and 26% down for AEW. Over on the NXT side, Halloween Havoc. Look at that. That's got to be the best NXT rating I have seen maybe ever. The takeovers always get great ratings. But the NXT television show usually, I would say it's usually in that 65 range. NXT, look at this. Halloween Havoc is rocking almost 80% thumbs up so far. 21% thumbs down. That is a great score. I am looking forward to Halloween Havoc. It looks like I've got something to look forward to now. That's pretty cool. By the way, this month is almost over. So if you want to pick up the new 13-year anniversary Sound Off t-shirt, now is a good time to do it. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. We've had a whole bunch of people pick up the shirt in the last probably 3 or 4 days, I'd say. So definitely go ahead and pick up your shirt. The anniversary is coming up less than 2 weeks away. I am very excited. 13 years. 675 episodes of that show. Not counting all of the YouTube stuff and reviews like this. Been a fun time having you guys along for the ride. Let's take some more of your super chats. Pedro, do you think Dolph Ziggler could be revived on AEW, or is he too far gone? Dolph Ziggler could go to AEW, and Dolph Ziggler could have probably, you know, very good matches with many of the people on the roster. Your question should be, could Dolph Ziggler go and have a career renaissance to where I care about him again in AEW? And the answer is no. He's been around too long. You know, a guy like Eddie Kingston, he's been around for a very long time too. Eddie Kingston probably has been wrestling longer than Dolph Ziggler has. Eddie Kingston, though, was almost like this hidden gem on the independent scene, though. A lot of people really weren't exposed to him. Now they're getting to see him and hear him every week for the first time. Dolph Ziggler has been front and center on WWE television now for over a decade. There is nothing new. There is nothing fresh. There is nothing different about Dolph Ziggler. We know he's a very good wrestler. And beyond that, I cannot see him having this kind of career resurgence where, what, he's going to go on to be a world champion or something? I mean, I don't see how that lasts for longer than 2 minutes if they do that. It certainly wouldn't get me to care anymore. That window where I cared closed a long time ago. Probably closed about 5 years ago. I don't think WWE would want to get rid of him, though. I think he's a good hand to have around. You know, as his career starts to wind down, he's the perfect person they could probably use as a coach, a trainer. So there's probably going to be value for him there for the rest of his career if he wants to stay. Dolph had his chances of leaving. If Dolph Ziggler was tired of WWE and wanted to go somewhere else and try to be successful, Dolph Ziggler had plenty of opportunities, and he made that choice. he made the choice not to go. So obviously he's happy right where he is. Oz and Glorious, old WCW kid here. Love seeing Bischoff make another appearance. Pedro, would you agree that AEW mentioning Nyla Rose being number one for months but not getting the title match until now shows how AEW does not utilize the rankings enough to create storylines for the number one ranked star? I think there was a comment that Jim Ross made tonight that was very telling, where when they mentioned Shawn Spears being 14-2, he made a comment, JR did, something to the effect of, you know, admitting that they just don't do a very good job all the time as much as they should of acknowledging the numbers and the stats. So I think that was kind of his way of, you know, on the air saying, hey, we're not doing a good enough job of this. So I would agree. Pedro, it seems like everyone challenges before the number one ranked star does, and it kind of goes against everything the ratings or the rankings were for. Look, the only thing is, you know, Nyla's getting a title match at one of their pay-per-views. They only have four pay-per-views a year. So Nyla getting a match at Full Gear for the championship should be a bigger deal. Maybe the argument is that if you're the number one ranked person, you get the title match on the next big show. I'm just trying to figure out exactly why they do what they do. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I know people have talked about, well, there's a difference in the rankings. If you want to make it like real sports, there's a difference between wins and quality wins. And as I said a few weeks ago, if that's the case, then they have to do a better job of explaining that on TV. Because right now, some of these rankings, it's just one total clusterfuck. Rodimus Prime, not surprised Bischoff was on Dynamite. Hope all is well with you, Solemn Monster. Well, you didn't say why you're not surprised Bischoff was on Dynamite. Do you know something I don't? It should be the other way around. I should know. I'm here to help fill in the blanks for all of you. If you know something you're not telling me, you better share that with me. You better DM me and tell me what's going on here with Bischoff. AEW does not need Eric Bischoff for more than a cameo or two. I don't want to wake up tomorrow morning and find out that Eric Bischoff has signed with AEW, because that's it. If you're gonna make the same mistakes that have been made in the past, then that's it. Peace out. We're done here. I'm gonna move on. Lone Wolf, is it too soon to do the 10 bell salute on Thunder Rosa's career? Yes, it is too soon. Let's not put the cart before the horse here. Let's not put the cart before the mantar. I mean, I feel the same way many of you do. But Thunder Rosa is a quality talent. I would like to think that wherever she goes, she will land on her feet. She will do well. As long as she doesn't go to Raw or SmackDown, then I think she'll be okay. Marcus Metcalf, Mox will lose the title on the last show of 2020. All right, well, there's the prediction from Marcus. He thinks that is where Moxley will lose the championship. Can't be any worse than that last show they did last year, where the Dark Order took out all the members of the Elite. Boy, they abandoned that real quick. Spanish Goddess, it was great seeing Seidel on Dynamite. I'm happy that I finally got to see a good show this week after that horrible episode of Impact yesterday. Yeah, I heard somebody got shot. I saw a little gif of Tommy Dreamer bent over on his knees, like Khan. What was it? Killer Khan? The guy from Star Trek? No, he was yelling no into the air. Who am I thinking of? The guy from Darth Vader from Star Trek. Right. Star Wars. Well, that just angered a whole bunch of people. Anyway, yeah, that's what Impact is doing these days. People are getting shot. I saw some of the Wrestle House stuff. So if this was part of, like, the whole Wrestle House thing where they just do, like, goofy comedy that's over the top. Look, I mean, we're watching stuff on WWE television with a guy in a play funhouse with puppets and a bunch of idiots in masks running around. Someone getting shot on TV was just the next logical step. Is that really any more dumb than some of the shit that we've seen on WWE television? Wasn't there another segment on Impact last year with, like, Rosemary where somebody got stabbed? It feels like there's a lot of murder on Impact Wrestling. You would think that they would avoid that. They only have so many people on the roster. You don't want to start killing them off one by one. Yeah, see, Frost says this is the fourth time that Impact has killed someone. That's what I thought. I thought Rosemary, I thought somebody got stabbed in some kind of skit that they did. Maybe it was some other female, I don't even know. You're asking me to make sense of a product that I just no longer pay any attention to. Dry chicken without flavor. What if the AEW women's locker room, including Britt Baker, Penelope Ford, and Chris Statlander, decides to walk out and jump to WWE or Impact? Well, that is not going to happen. Why would they do that? Why would they do that? Why? Because you don't think that the women's division in AEW is all that great? Or they feel like they're not getting the opportunities that they should be getting? I mean, you're talking about going from, you know, one snake pit to another. I mean, it's not like by doing that they're trading up. Why would they do that? It makes no sense. I think Britt Baker is very happy where she is. Spanish goddess Rosa still had MMA commitments with Combate Americas. Yeah, she is. She is still doing MMA as well, I believe. Sean Turner, the Cobra, was the most protected, so I am not shocked. That's right. Santino's Cobra. Dry chicken. Halloween 3 was better than Jason Takes Manhattan. Halloween 3 was better than a lot of the Friday the 13th movies. And I was a fan of a lot of those movies. Daniel Carr, thank you for the $2. Marcus Metcalf, in my opinion, just because you're number one does not get you the title match first. In boxing and UFC, the number one ranked person does not always get the title shot first. Well, they need to do a better job of explaining where the number one person has been on television. They have a weekly television show and no Vicky Guerrero. I mean, is Vicky even with her anymore? I don't even know. It's just very strange. If she's not featured on the show, then why is she number one? I guess on the show tonight, they did make a mention of the fact that I guess Nyla was protesting until she gets a title match, she's not going to show up. I just read that to be their way of explaining why she hasn't been on TV after realizing, oh shit, she hasn't been on TV. I think that's just a cover excuse. And Daniel Carr, it's Vader from Star Wars, but I still love you, man. Yeah. I always confuse the whole Star Wars, Star Trek. I always confuse it. It always gets people very animated. I was never a big fan of either one. I mean, that's kind of why. I mean, I sometimes legitimately get confused between those two. I once did the whole Vulcan... I can't do it. But the whole Vulcan hand signal thing, I thought that was a Star Wars thing. And then I was told, no, it's Star Trek. It's all the same shit. It's all sci-fi bullshit. You know, fantasy, you know, sci-fi fantasy stuff. But people take this very seriously. All right, one last look at these polls here. Head on over to Twitter and vote at Solomonster, 74.2 up for AEW, 25, well, actually roughly 26 down. And the NXT poll, 78 up and 21% thumbs down. So actually, if I take a look at these two polls, unless my eyes deceive me, NXT is winning. This is a first. Here on the Wednesday stream. Let me know what you thought of the show. I thought that it was good, but I'm hearing very good things about Halloween Havoc. I did see the picture from earlier of the pumpkin, so I was very excited to see the pumpkin. They busted out the pumpkin. The inflatable pumpkin for NXT. I saw the clip of some of the set, you know, with the tombstones and everything. I just love the whole Halloween theme. It's a shame it took them 20 years to bring it back, but now that it's back... Very excited to go back and watch. On Sunday, it's going to be episode 676 of The Sound Off. We're going to be doing history. We'll take your mailbag questions on the show. There's going to be a whole bunch of different things to talk about. And the 13-year anniversary, I think it'll just be kind of the 13-year anniversary week, 13-year anniversary month in November. We'll have some fun here on these streams. I hope you'll all join me for that. Again, without all of you, there is no 13 years. So, seriously, thank you very much for all of your support, all of your super chats tonight. I do appreciate it. I'm going to get on out of here. And until next time, be well. Stay safe. Thank you, as always, for joining me on a Wednesday night. We got one more Dynamite show before Full Gear. The go-home show is next Wednesday. And then after that, I'll be live the following weekend on YouTube for a full recap of Full Gear. That's on November 7th. I have a few more cool things planned for the YouTube channel in the month of November. So I'm very excited about that. I hope you're all standing by. And we'll check out all the new content that we have coming to the channel. Food Hive, thank you. You get the final super chat of the night. He's about to cook some chicken wings. Now you got me hungry. Now you got me hungry. I got to go figure out what I'm going to eat. All right, guys. Happy Halloween to all of you. My favorite holiday, dried chicken. You too, man. Happy Halloween, Turtlehead. Everybody in the chat, take care. And I will see you guys back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.